Earlier in the show, we talked about the importance of the arts, even in an economic downturn. Well, that's a subject dear to the heart of music impresario Quincy Jones. Jones learned early on about the impact American artists have not only on the country, but on the world. In the mid-50s, Jones was part of the Dizzy Gillespie big band, and the State Department sent them on a goodwill tour around the globe. It was during the Cold War, and President Eisenhower wanted to spread the ideals of American democracy as a weapon against communism. As part of our Living Legends series, this is Quincy Jones on life as a representative of American culture.
We were the kamikaze black band. We went up and down to Tehran when the Shah was in there in 56, you know. In Aleppo, Damascus, Karachi, even Iraq, Bangladesh, Dhaka, Beirut, Ankara, Istanbul. The young rebels from Cyprus were throwing stones at the U.S. embassies. Get the Gillespie band over there, the kamikaze band. We were there 2 days from Ankara, Turkey, and we played a concert in Athens. All of those student rebels were in the audience. They rushed the stage after we finished. Scared us to death. They put Dizzy on their shoulder, and they were saying, Dizzy, Dizzy, because the music has a power, you know, it's different. And we went into Beirut. We saw, oh, my God, it must have been 10,000 people there, and it was for Dizzy. You have to go to know. That's all I'm trying to say, really. To see how the world is operating on simultaneously is the most fascinating thing in the world. I've been lucky, I think, because I got a chance to get out of the country when I was 19 with Lionel Hampton. And Ben Webster, you know, the jazz saxophone player, I talk a lot now, but I used to listen when I was young, a lot. And I'd never had a mother, so I had to listen, you know. And Ben Webster said, Youngblood, every country you go to, eat the food the people eat, listen to the music they listen to, and learn 30 or 40 words in every language, because music, food, and language is the soul of a country, you know. That's why I'm so anxious for us to get a Secretary of the Arts, or Minister of Culture, if you will, you know, because our music is the most widely imitated music on the planet. When Ben said about learning, when Webster said about learning the language, I took it very seriously, you know. I studied Serbo-Croatian, Farsi, and Iran. You want to get pimp slapped. You call an Iranian Arabic. I am Persian. I'm not Arabic. And I speak Farsi, you know. Turkish, Greek, French, Swedish, Russian. I studied Katakana in Japan. I'm studying Mandarin now, writing and speaking Mandarin and Arabic. But it's the most incredible experience in the world to learn. Just you start with a few, and you start to grow. And after a while, you just don't have to drag your culture into everybody else's culture. And that's been one of our problems. It's trying to make everybody like us.
You're listening to the musings of music impresario Quincy Jones. Today, Jones is a man of the world, traveling constantly and mingling with the rich and famous. But he didn't start out that way. He was born in Chicago in 1933. That's where he was first introduced to music and to life's hard knocks.
And man, believe me, Chicago makes Compton and Harlem look like Boys Town. They don't play, as you can see now, with the governor. They don't play. They never did play. It has been the spawning ground for gangsters since the beginning of the country. And it's at a stockyard in the middle of the town when we were little kids, you know. And all I saw were Tommy guns and stogies and piles of money, dead bodies everywhere. Dudes hanging on lampposts in the hood, ice picks in their necks, two-gun peeps shooting kids in the back, you know. Teachers getting killed in the hallways every day. And they didn't play. I got my own medals there. I went in the wrong street. They nailed my hand with a switchblade to the fence. I didn't know how to interpret it. My daddy hit him in the head with a hammer and all that stuff. I was on the wrong street. He used to send us down to Louisville to stay with my grandmother, who was an ex-slave in the shotgun shack. And we always kid and said my grandmother's summer villa. No heat, no water, no electricity, kerosene lamps, coal stove, and all this stuff, you know. My grandmother's barn, French and Cherokee, African, French and Cherokee. My grandfather was running a brothel for some white dudes down there, and at one point they wanted to put my mother and all her sisters in the brothel house. Stole a car and took them to St. Louis. That's the way it was back then. One of the biggest painful things in my life now is that this country, the kids, especially the black kids, don't have a clue about their culture. Not a clue. Because you can go get to where you're going if you know where you came from. You know, from gospel, blues, jazz, all of it. That nobody, no one person invented gospel. It's a sociological result, you know, of a really painful existence, you know. So it's a sociological phenomenon. But now it hurts me to see that everybody in the world has adopted our music as their Esperanto. Everywhere. I mean without fail, you know, whether it's Jimmy's and Monte Carlo, Rio, Cairo, wherever. Shanghai, which has been all these places three times in the last 2 years. I asked a kid in Seattle, a little brother, what do you thought about Louis Armstrong? He said, I heard his name. I said, what do you think about Charlie Parker, Coltrane, and Duke Ellington? He said, I don't know who they are. It hurts. It really hurts. This is all about our lives in this country, you know, really. It's a society that gets rejected, and they say, to hell with it, we build our own society, you know. And that's, it's been like that all the way, you know, since Louis Armstrong. To me, I look at life through my core skill, which is orchestrator, arranger, and composer, you know. And in the beginning, it was four trumpets, four trombones, five saxes, piano, bass, drum, and guitar. That's what makes every big band happen. And that's the power of music, you know. Because it's absolute, just like mathematics are. But music is the only thing that affects the left and right brain simultaneously. And it's fascinating, and you have to just constantly keep nosy.
The one and only Quincy Jones. He has a new book out. It's called The Complete Quincy Jones, My Journey and Passions, Photos, Letters, Memories, and More from Q's Personal Collection. That's News and Notes. Glad you could be with us. Nicole Childers, Christabel Ncia Boate, and Jeffrey Bennett produced the show. Sasha Woodruff is the editor, and Sonata Lee Narsis directs. The technical director is Shireen Strausberg. Marcia Caldwell is our drive engineer. The News and Notes staff includes Roy Hurst, Jeffrey Gardner, Devin Robbins, Allison Samuel, Zachary Slobig, Joanne Griffith, and Drew Tewksbury. To listen to the show or subscribe to the podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for the newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. On Monday, General Motors posts historic fourth quarter losses and plans to lay off tens of thousands more. Is that well-traveled path to the black middle class closed for good? Tony Cox, this is News and Notes.